Du, vi må vaske klær. Strømmen billig nå?
Sjekk appen.
Jeg lurer på hvor mye strøm vi bruker på en dag, ja.
Sjekk appen da vel.
Hvilken app?
Fortum-appen.
Nå?
Fortum-appen gir deg oversikt og trygghet. Kanskje det derfor vi Nordens mest valgte. Vessel, Vessel, Vessel.
Halla, og hjertelig velkommen til en ny episode av Vesselstuen. Det blir på engelsk denne også, because I got Gian back on the podcast. Happy to have you back, mate.
Oh, great to be here. I mean, I really enjoyed it the first time. I promised I would come back again. And honestly, after the first episode, I got so much love from Norway. Like, the DMs I got, the amount of people that followed me, the positive comments, I was like, yeah, I have to come back.
I love
my Norwegian family now.
Yeah, I think I introduced you probably to lots of, because we have a lot of people that listen that are not on Twitter or YouTube or just sort of, so I think you probably were introduced to a lot of people who hopefully also followed some of your main points, because we just, before getting live here, we just talked about the latest score and some of the decisions we made before the week one was pivotal, to say the least, with the Cels with a 9-pointer there, with a clean sheet and against Liverpool, and also Gabriel with a 15-pointer with the bullet header from the corner. So it's been happy days with a lot of the selections we discussed before our game with Kwanjian.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Cels away at Liverpool, right? So much upside was lying there, because obviously you've got the barrage of effective ownership from all the Liverpool assets: Trent, Jota, Salah, Diaz, Robbo. And then you've got literally just poor old Cels, but he came triumphant. And then you have Gabriel, right? And that was a nice, I would say, fixture for him, in the sense that Spurs are very susceptible to conceding set pieces. And he's the best header of the ball in the opposition's box. Maybe Romero can compete with him slightly, but I think Gabriel's a notch above. And yeah, he profited from that, and it was a brilliant, brilliant week.
Yeah, I think this is sort of the week I've seen in fantasy almost. I've been playing for like 13 years that like the decision, a lot of people went Saka and Isaac to João Pedro. Isaac didn't return, but there are like small differences in the teams that have made massive differences in terms of the points scored. So I've had a lot of friends that wildcarded into like a 31, 32 point team.
Yeah.
And I was just, you know what? I'm going to save my transfer. I wanted to do Gabriel to Trent, but I was like, I don't have enough money for that either way. So just not doing anything probably gave me lots of points almost gaining 40 points on people who just wildcarded is unheard of, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I remember a scenario maybe two seasons back when Liverpool beat United 7-0 and we all wildcarded out of Salah. And then he obviously scored whatever he did, like 21 points, I think. So it was a really, really good week. It was a very, very good week.
Yeah, and you also have the other sort of lots of people. The ones who did go without Haaland, I that was never a consideration for me, but they hoped for Salah and the blank, and then Haaland returning again. So we have a sample size now of 4 game weeks, which is, for me, sort of the minimum sample size. You need to be able to sort of see trends and for individual players, but also for the tactical considerations and the new managers and everything. So what would you say have been the main takeaways for the first 4 game weeks for you, Gian?
Oh, wow. Well, we got a lot. I will start with just a macro level look at the defensive assets. I think the way football is going within the Premier League now, we're going to see less and less clean sheets. I think if you look at the way Forest set up away at Anfield, that is not something that we're going to see so commonly. They set up in a low block, 4-4-2, the standard, very compact. He dropped both his wingers. He played central midfielders, and he just looked to really cover small spaces, not allow them time in the pockets. Really robust and aggressive in the duels. A lot of physical strength in the side, right? And that is like maybe a Brentford of old. They were a really difficult team to beat. Nowadays, though, even the lesser sides, like you look at Southampton, they're not willing to play like that. They want to play their way. They want to play out, not just out the back, but also through the pivot, progressive passes, really like press to a much higher, have a line that's significantly higher as well. And I just think as a result of that, with the attacking quality in the league, of which there is an abundance, right? There is so much. Even the quote-unquote smaller sides have some brilliant players. They're just going to get punished for it. So I think you'll see a lot of less clean sheets. And as a result, the defenders you have attacking upside, specifically like Gabriel from corners, Porro from open play, players like that, Robinson even at 4-5, these are the type of players that you're going to really want in your team and that you should have.
Yeah, I think it's interesting also. I when Kwanzaa was about to drop after being hooked at halftime there, I went for Rico Lewis, and I think it's been a masterclass in points dodging for him as well. So that's sort of my play style, is I go for the upside, even if that means going from a rotation risk in Kwanzaa to Rico Lewis, who was a rotation risk, and he got hooked at halftime, just like Kwanzaa was this past game week. But it's like on the in another instance, he could have had lots of points. So I'm thinking, if I'm wildcarding like game week 6, I'm going for Porro, Gabriel, and probably also Robinson and the people with the attacking upside, because in terms of clean sheets, do you favor? I've seen lots of people being swayed by the Raya points gathering, and for me that feels sort of suboptimal, because I would rather have Gabriel, Saka, and Havertz.
Yeah, so I think at the start of the season it was definitely suboptimal. I think it was really difficult to argue, regardless of the outcome, that having him was part of the best Arsenal trio. However, now, seeing that they're conceding a few more shots this year, and the fact that defences in general are a bit weaker, I don't mind it as much. I do still think that at 4-5, when you have Sells currently, he, like, for a million cheaper, it's so important just to get the right 4.5. And not only that, but you can then use the Arsenal spot elsewhere, right? Yeah. Leicester at home, Southampton at home, Bournemouth, not even Bournemouth away, but Leicester at home, Southampton at home in 6 and 7 is, I don't think you expect Arsenal to score less than 4 goals, I think, but you'd probably want more. And between those two games, you would like a double up just to cover all the upside. And realistically, there's nowhere else to go but Saka and Havertz, right? So you almost guarantee yourselves a really high floor in that week. And I agree. I think Gabriel has the best upside out of all the defenders, including Raya, because of his threat from set pieces, right? Yeah. He's already caught up to him. So I'm pretty bullish on the trio of Gabriel, Saka, Havertz, and personally would still be fading Raya when you can save money by going for someone like Sells.
Yeah, I agree. And also in terms of the midfield now, we're sort of seeing the ideal template. And you've been sort of contrarian in your views in terms of, let's say, Gabriel, you were a really big proponent of Havertz to start the season. But now, if we just were to discuss like the ideal midfield, if you're wildcarding in game week 6, and let me just say also, for me, I have 2 free transfers now. I think with 2 Arsenal players already, I think I'm saving my wild card. But if we were to choose a perfect midfield for the wild card, which 5 players do you think? For me, it's still Eze, Salah, Saka, Smith Rowe, and then the last one is the one I'm leaning towards, Mbeumo.
So that midfield is very, very, very expensive, and you basically can't have that and like Havertz as well.
That's possible. You're lacking Trent though.
Wait, so you can have that entire midfield, have Haaland and Havertz. Oh, but you don't have a third striker, right?
No, I'm playing with 2 strikers. So Haaland and then a cheap second striker and a fodder third striker.
And you can still afford that?
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. I didn't...
But you're lacking Trent and your defense is cheap as chips, but you have to have someone like Calvert-Lewin as your second striker though.
Yeah. Okay. I didn't realize you could have a midfield that strong. So the way I was looking at it is, I'm so adamant on persisting on 3-4-3. If I could, I would have like 7 strikers. I think they're so much better than the midfielders this year.
Oh, really?
Like, yeah, a lot better. Yeah. I really, really like the look of them. I like Vardy at the moment. I might buy him. I like Calvert-Lewin. I like Havertz. I love Watkins. I love Haaland as well. So for me, they're all good. But if I had to pick a midfield with that formation in mind, I think I'm going Saka, Salah, Mbeumo, Rodgers, and Harry Winks, because I would rather have the third forward.
So are you off Eze at the moment then?
I have him. He gets this week and he gets next week. And if he fails, he's gone the week after. My plan basically is, like, I think I'm going to bring in Salah this week. And then I will get Mbeumo in game week 7 if Eze is doing rubbish and Mbeumo is performing.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting point about the strikers, because usually it's been sort of barren in terms of strikers in fantasy the last couple of seasons, and now You know, I think it's so welcome with not everything being the same as the last season, which is has sort of felt like at times the last three seasons. So with Watkins, he exploded last game week, finally breaking his sort of duck in terms of points. And I saw someone, and this is what annoys me in terms of content creation and analysis, when I saw someone discussing getting Watkins in, and someone said, oh, no, no, the Midlands derbies are usually low in goals scored. Do you believe in sort of like fixture-related analysis when lots of the players have been swapped since the last time they played?
Yeah, so you mean like historical analysis?
Yeah.
So the way I view that is, I think, look, anyone who's played even a bit of sport will know that you'll have your games and you'll have your grounds, which you like just a bit more like than the rest, right? So I take it into consideration a little bit. However, if Watkins is playing Everton and every single one of those players are completely different, then I'm not going to read into it too much. But yeah, sure. Like if Salah, for example, loves going to Old Trafford, so maybe I should have had that in mind and stuff like that. My friend's pretty big on it, so he'll let me know. But apart from that, no, not really, not too much. I like to just play the cards as they are and not worry too much about the past.
Du, jeg trenger en strømavtale. Bare noe enkelt.
Fortum.
Så har jeg jo lyst til å følge med på forbruket mitt.
Fortum.
Noe som trygt og enkelt, liksom.
Fortum.
Ok, hvem strømleverandøren din?
Fortum.
Enkelt, trygt og oversiktlig. Det ikke rart at Fortum den mest valgte I Norden.
TripleTex et fleksibelt regnskapsprogram for deg som driver bedrift. Timeføring, lønn, fakturering, årsoppgjør og samarbeid med regnskapsfører bare noe av det som blir enklere med TripleTex. Og med den smarte mobilappen har du alltid kontoret med deg. Prøv gratis på TripleTex.no.
Yeah, so where are you in terms of wildcard consideration?
12. The plan preseason was to wildcard in 12. It's still in 12. The whole reason I got triple Arsenal, even when they had Villa away, Spurs away, City away, was just so that I could, because I backed them. I think they're good enough to return in those games, and they have. I think Havertz has blanked in both of those two games, but returned in the others, and then Gabriel and Saka have returned in both. So if they get through, if I get through game week 5, then I really don't have to get wildcard game week 6, and I'm not going to.
No.
I let the team roll until game week 12, where there's a huge fixture swing, and then I capitalized with the wild card on that, where a lot of people won't have it. So that was always the strategy, and it hasn't changed.
Yeah, it feels like such a big advantage getting through these 6 game weeks, and sort of there aren't really any big fixture shifts until game week 12. It feels like such a big advantage to be able to keep it and just sort of roll the free transfer when you're able to, and with 2 Arsenal now, you're sort of set up well to do that. Like the only consideration that I'm doing with my team is, I think we have to sell Alexander Isak at this point, don't you, Gian?
Yeah, I think he is the one that is getting sold regardless. I have 2 transfer routes in mind that I'm considering, and both of them involve selling him. So yeah, I haven't, talking about free transfers, I haven't rolled one yet, and I don't anticipate rolling until like at least game week 6 or 7, but I might not. I might just not get to roll ever, basically.
Yeah, but it's sort of too. If you don't have Salah, I think someone has to become him for Bournemouth at home with the Holland meeting the best defense in Europe, probably.
Yeah, so I've dropped a lot on my bullishness of Haaland captain. I was super comfortable captaining compared to most, maybe just before the Arsenal game. But then I see the job they're going to do away at Spurs without Declan Rice and without Marina. Like they did it with a 2 of Jorginho and Partey, and they limited Spurs to basically 0 big chances. So with that in mind, I was like, oh, okay, if Rice is going to come back, even though City are a lot better, I back Arsenal to do a decent job. And I would like my captain to have at least significant upside because, yeah, there's a hole there for Salah. There's certainly a hole there.
Yeah, I agree. But seeing if you already have Salah and Holland, who would be your favorite sort of replacement for Isaac? Because I'm thinking you can either go just Watkins, or you can go Havertz, or you can go cheap. But the reason for me to go cheap would be to free up money to get Trent in, and I'm like that can easily wait a little bit.
Yeah, so there's 3 routes. There's the 2 premium route, or 1 premium in Watkins, because I think in the next 5, I actually wouldn't be surprised if he outscored Havertz. I really, really like the look of him. I think the fixtures are magnificent. He looks a little bit different. I think he's got a bit more of an edge to him this season with John Duran knocking on the door. So I'm really happy to own him, should I do so, assuming expected minutes are good. And then obviously Havertz for the fixtures. But I really am considering Dominic Calvert-Lewin, because when I watched that performance against Villa, and he dominates the centre-backs physically, and Everton actually created a decent amount of chances, and he had a decent amount of chances against Bournemouth, I'm like, okay, cool. With that fixture on, at 5-9, yeah, there's definitely some value to be had.
Yeah, it just feels like it's already been 4 seasons, almost 5, since he had that massive season where he scored 16 goals in 2020, 2021. And he was, I have a lot of friends who've been just, they've jumped on the Dominic Calvert-Lewin train so many times since, and he always finds a way to get hurt or disappoint us. But with that fixture run, I've never seen anything quite like it, and you have to be careful not to sort of overrate the fixture difficulty rating that's on the official side. But Leicester, then Crystal Palace with their defensive issues, Newcastle has been terrible defensively this season, Ipswich and Fulham, I've never seen anything quite like it actually in terms of game week 5 through Wolverhampton at home at game week 14. So he can represent fantastic value, and also a route for Trent Alexander-Arnold as well as Gabriel for those who don't have.
You're Trent really big on Trent, aren't you? Why are you so big on Trent?
Well, so the reason I'm his underlying stats in terms of creativity is amazing, without having more than, he's not had one return so far, and also his expected goal involvement is per 90 is like 0.60, I think, something like that. So my thinking is when they get the clean sheets and he has the offensive returns, you're looking at 12 points minimum. So with Bournemouth at home, Bournemouth has improved, no doubt, but Wolverhampton has not looked like a good side. I don't think Crystal Palace really has either. And then you have the Chelsea and Arsenal fixtures, which is, you know, difficult. But I like his fixture run and also his underlying stats.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of it. I don't think he's a bad option in any case, and I don't think you can critique going there. I would, however, just do a lot of deep analysis and just be really careful, because I think when you're paying $7 million for a defender, when no one else is at 6'5", I know Ben White is, but he's basically a non-option there. Like, no one has him. I would just be really careful, because that million, especially in this current landscape, is a lot. And I think that if you, for example, I watched the whole of the Liverpool Forest game, and there were a lot of times after the first 30 minutes, he was really influential in the first 30. But after that, he held back a lot. And then even when McAllister got hooked and he got put into the pivot, he's nowhere near as effective from that area in terms of output. So I would just be a little bit careful, because like I said, I personally do think that his attacking returns will be hampered a little bit until Slot realizes that his best position just is playing that wide creative fullback and gives him the free rein to do that. I think until then, you should be just a little bit careful, because that $7 million is pretty expensive.
Yeah, the reason Trent comes into play is because the emergence of Calvert-Lewin as an option for Isaac. That frees up so much money. I can literally do Lewis Hall to Trent Alexander-Arnold and still have money left over.
Yeah, I think you wouldn't have a third strong forward then, right?
Oh no, that's Jebison.
Yeah, so I would say that like you're going to get a lot more value out of like a Havertz or an Ezek than you are a Trent this season, personally, like pound for pound, when you look at who the other defensive asset you can get is. But that's just my opinion. And
that's why we have this discussion. That's the whole sort of value of the podcast as well, because sometimes I can get blind with what looks like a sort of a sexy team on paper, and then you forget that you have a non-playing third forward that probably should be one that gets you points when we're talking about the value of the strikers this season.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like, there's a lot of ways to go this year. There have been a lot of ways to go this year.
So are there any players that you're worried about that you feel like have disappointed in terms of what your original sort of expectations was before the season? So I'm thinking, for example, Palmer, as some people getting a little bit nervous.
Yeah, I think Cole's an interesting one. I think you'll see a greater spread of output in this Chelsea side this year. I think when he plays at the top of that midfield box, he's absolutely fine.
I don't like him on the right, though. That's my main problem.
Same. Yeah, same. In this system, you just have like, when it's different in a Poch 4-2-3-1, where like the 10 will do slightly different things and there's no one to really occupy the half space consistently. But when you play like a box midfield and have him on the right, that right 8 can always slot into the half space, which kind of crowds it a little bit. So I think that having him on the right is pretty bad, and that's why you really need to project Madueke and even Neto's expected minutes on the right. So yeah, he's not been bad. I think he's on what, like 25, 27 points.
Yeah, yeah,
right?
That massive 17-point game. That sort of.
Yeah, I mean, 27 points from four is brilliant. I do think though, like going forward, you want to be just a bit careful with the opportunity cost of others. Obviously, Eze's definitely been a bit of a disappointment. He's just been point dodging. Like he really should have had so many more
crazy
returns.
I've never seen anything like it, but it's like it's been point dodging on like a massive level.
Yeah, I mean, you could argue for Bruno Fernandes owners that he's been like a disappointment. I wasn't too high on him at the start of the season just because of United's issues. So I'm not sure you could say I'm like too disappointed with him because I don't think he was that great of an option in the first place. And yeah, I think there haven't actually been too many upsets. Obviously, like all these stupid defenders are like Kwanzaa, Lewis Hall, which and Nkunku, I owned every single one of them.
Yeah,
Barco,
me too. Yeah.
Yeah, I owned all four of them, these expected minutes risks, and every single one of them flops within inside a week. But yeah, apart from them, like I think it's gone fairly normal.
Yeah, I think another player that's been sort of hampered by the tactical setup is Son for Spurs. He's playing hugging the touchline as like a left winger at times at Arsenal. He was just creating absolutely nothing. The last episode we had a couple of football journalists from Norway, and we were talking about like Ange Ball, and does he have a plan B, and does he really have the players to play his sort of system? And right now it seems he's a bit rigid in terms of adapting to the situation at hand and the fixtures at hand.
Yeah, I think we always have to firstly give respect to the fact that he is a Premier League coach and he hasn't got there by being an idiot, right? Like he's obviously done some tremendous things. He knows a lot about football. However, I've been saying it for so long and I agree that I just don't think the system is right for this type of squad. Like if you really want to compete with Pep and Guardiola and Pep and Arteta, you need to be 100 out of 100 when you don't have a squad as good as theirs. So to take your best attacking player and then ship him all the way on the touchline, I don't think is anywhere close to maximizing his value. He could easily, I think, change the system to have Madison deeper in that left half space, let Son enter that half space, and then have Udogie as a constant and consistent overlapping fullback. I mean, Udogie's basically a roadrunner, and his skill set certainly is much better in terms of crossing the ball from wide areas as opposed to being able to play in those small spaces. He just doesn't have the technical quality to do that. And then you also get Son in closer proximity to goal, leverage his finishing, and just general small space ability and his movement and going into out. Yeah, there's just so many reasons that you would have Son closer to the goal. Obviously, like, what can you do? You can't drop Solanke now. You spend 60 million on him. So I really do think he needs to tweak the system. And if he doesn't, I honestly think he could get the sack like sooner than people think, because there's only so long before people get really frustrated that Son's being used in this way.
Yeah, and it sort of looks a little bit disinterested at times also, sort of like blowing off criticism in a way that's usually not a good sign for a manager. That's like, this is a, they haven't... This is their worst start in a long, long time. And football fans' memory is really short. So you can get like in a, what's it called? A couple of more bad results. And then it's sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy with the bad sort of mood around the club as well.
Yeah, I mean, and it's Tottenham, right? Like,
yeah.
they've experienced so much suffering over the past X amount of years. I can't imagine their fuse is particularly long anymore. So yeah, I think he probably needs to turn things around. But the thing is, they should have beat Newcastle. They were better than them. They should have been Leicester, because you shouldn't be drawing away Leicester. And they should be really on 9 points by now, but they're not. They're on four. And then next week they face Brentford. They're lucky that Vissa got injured, otherwise they could have taken something off them. I think they'll win that game and be okay. Their fixture run's decent, but you never know. Like Brighton and United, they beat them both. I mean, like, they get beaten by both, and yeah, all of a sudden there's pressure starting to mount, because at that point top four is starting to look very difficult.
Yeah, and also I think the main thing now is it's probably not just about the result, but also like, can he make some changes? Like, it seems like if you do the same setup the fifth game in a row when it's not working, and sort of that it gets to be a narrative around your managerial style that you're not really good at adapting, and then you have weak results against supposedly weaker opponents, then something starts to creep in as the narrative, as we like to say on this podcast. We don't believe in narratives, but narratives definitely loves football.
Yeah, I mean, like, this is the Premier League, right? If you're not at the level, it's going to get you and get you pretty quick. So for his sake, I hope he changes it. If not, and when he does, Son will become a brilliant option again, because he just is. Like, I got 16 points in game week 2 when he played at 9, and I feel like he should be playing there every week. I know they spent 60 on Solanke. That's why I think he has to change the system to at least bring Son inside off the left. So yeah, we'll see. It's Spurs anyway, so do we really care?
Do you have any favorite differentials you're looking to get in, Jim?
Calvert-Lewin. I'm high on Calvert-Lewin. I've been impressed. I like what I saw, not just in terms of like Everton, but his, like, a lot of little things that he did. I was like, yeah, okay, this man looks sharp. So I like DCL. There's not too many. Oh, one differential I like is Salah from game week 6, which sounds weird, but if you look at the amount of people wildcarding, right, loads of them are going to go without Salah, and all the people that have Salah that have already wildcarded, that's their route to Saka. And like, being able to have them both, and Haaland, and Havertz, and Gabriel, yeah, and Mbeumo, yeah, I'm a fan. So I think Wolves away game week 6, Salah, yeah. I think Palace away game week 7, yeah. So I might go there and just let it ride for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I'm interested to see who you're going to captain in game week 6 between Salah against Wolves and Haaland against Newcastle away.
Oh, that's not a debate for me. I'm captaining Haaland. I'm captaining Haaland.
I think people learned a lesson this last game week.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, apart from game week 5, I think I'll captain Haaland every single week.
Yeah, I think it's the first time I've sort of approached the perma cap point. There was like times we did with Luis Suarez, I remember, but now it's I can't really see the only fixture I won't captain Holland is against Arsenal.
Yeah, same. Maybe Liverpool, I'll consider it depending on who like else has a decent fixture, but yeah, I'm almost definitely captaining Haaland game week 6. Unless like Salah scores a hat trick and Haaland blanks and something happens, which I actually think could happen. But yeah, I'm probably going to just captain Haaland again.
Oh, perfect. Yep. Let's have a little break and then we'll go on to listener questions.
Du, jeg trenger en strømavtale. Bare noe enkelt.
Fortum.
Så har jeg jo lyst til å følge med på forbruket mitt.
Fortum.
Noe som trygt og enkelt, liksom.
Fortum.
Ok, hvem strømleverandøren din da?
Fortum.
Enkelt, trygt og oversiktlig. Det ikke rart at Fortum den mest valgte I Norden.
Å drive en bedrift uten regnskapsprogrammet TrippelTex litt som å skru sammen et flatpakket møbel uten monteringsanvisning. Det går nok, men ikke uten mye frustrasjon. TrippelTex, det fleksible regnskapsprogrammet som forenkler hverdagen for over 130 000 fornøyde kunder. Prøv gratis på TrippelTex.no. Lytterspørsmål.
Okay, welcome back with Gian here. We're going to go through your listener questions, but before that, we have to go through our teams at the moment and our transfer plans. So, Gian, if you can take us through your team at the moment.
Yeah, sure. So I've got Sells in goal, Gabriel, Robinson, Konsa, Lewis Hall and Barco, who are basically... Lewis Hall's not Deadwood now, but they're not great. Then I've got Harry Winks, Rogers, Smith Rowe, who's been absolutely magnificent, Saka... equally so, and Eze, who came in for Son last week, and I've got Haaland, Havertz, and Isak.
Yeah, so I think like the main problem area in your team is probably the defense, right? With Hall, Barco there, and like the bench is not good, but you have Gabriel and then Robinson. Who was your third one?
Konsa.
So are you happy with the Aston Villa defender? I think they looked really poor this season.
Yeah, they haven't looked great defensively, and like Everton was the real alarm bell game for me, where I wasn't particularly impressed. But I'm actually quite happy with my defense. Like I said, I don't think there's too many good options. Sure, in an ideal world, I would have a couple extra transfers, and I could sort it out. But honestly, for this game week, I'm fine having Gabriel away at City because I know the threat he poses in the opposition's box. Conte's got a really decent, or not really decent, but it's an okay fixture considering it's at home. Mm. And Robinson, given that I'm selling Isak, okay, at least he's at home and at least I get some upside there. So I'm fine with it. It's not too bad.
Yeah, it's interesting because we started with pretty similar teams. I chickened out and didn't go with Havertz in the end, but I have Sells in goal, then Greaves, Gabriel and Rico Lewis, and then I have Salah, Saka, Eze, Rodgers and Smith-Rowe, and then I have Haaland and Isak. Yeah. As my starting 11, my bench is is a typical bench for me. It's Bentley in goal, Lewis Hall, Jebison and Barco. So there are probably areas to improve, but I'm really, really happy I started with both Holland and Salah there.
Yeah, I mean, that's really solid. And you've clearly got an absolute stacked midfield. You take money out of Isak to DCL and you can upgrade it even further. So yeah, I mean, your team's in a really good shape. I think having Saka, Salah and Haaland for Game Week 5 is actually super optimal, because it means you get Salah captaincy in Game Week 5 and there's a differential down the line and you don't have to use free transfers on Saka.
Exactly. And but also with you knowing the whole extent of my squad, are you still opposed to doing Isak to DCL and Lewis Hall to Trent?
I still think that, like, I would... So it's Gabriel, Greaves and who else, sorry?
Rico Lewis.
And who does... Yeah, okay. So your defense is pretty weak. Who does Greaves have this week?
Southampton away.
Okay, so yeah, you definitely play Greaves.
Yeah,
I would play Gabriel. Honestly, I think it's fine.
Yeah, I'm starting Gabriel. Yeah.
And then yeah, Rico Lewis. I don't even know if he's gonna play, so that's not great.
That's why I need to get Trent for Hall. So I can.
And
do you have
two free trees? Do you have?
Yeah,
two trees?
I saved before this week. This one. Yeah.
So I think I would definitely get DCL for Isak. I'm not sure if I would necessarily go Trent. I would consider maybe going for one of, like, the cheaper options that doesn't look too bad, just depending on your future plans down the line. But you'll know your future plans better than me.
Yeah, it's just a good place to be in when you have two free transfers. And does the change in the rules that you keep the sort of saved transfers through your wildcard affect your thinking at all in terms of wildcard?
Not for me, because I haven't been able to roll a free yet and I'm not rolling this week. So I'll probably roll once in like the next 3-4 weeks. So for me, rolling transfers is never a big thing.
It's like the best thing, almost better than doing a couple of moves and being rewarded, is not doing anything and then being rewarded, because my two moves were going to be Isak to João Pedro and Gabriel to Trent Alexander-Arnold. It's like the best feeling when you just sit there and do nothing and get rewarded for it.
Yeah, I mean, like, having frees nowadays is just such a luxury. I mean, not even a luxury, but it's just brilliant, right? And I would love to do so, but we're not quite there yet.
Yeah, so let's do some listener questions. I got Tommy Bergstrom here. He's asking, do you keep Eze with him sharing the penalty responsibilities with Mateta, or would you swap him for Mbeumo on wildcard?
So I think you give him game week 5, because you're unlikely to be wildcard in game week 5. I think you give him game week 5, see how he performs. And then from there, you can really judge it. I actually quite like the Man United at home fixture for him. And all that I've seen from him in open play suggests to me that he's been points dodging. He's looked good from open play. So I think it's somewhat of an inevitability that eventually he's going to haul. It's just when. And as a result, for now, I would keep him. And also, like, Vissa's injured, so you don't know how that affects Ibuemo yet. So I'd say assess after game week 5 mainly.
Yeah, I agree. If you're going to wildcard in game week 6, I think I know the answer to this one. Who's your favorite? What's your favorite plan for Isak? Is that going to Dominic Calvert-Lewin?
Yeah, so I'm so adamant on playing 3-4-3. I think with that Arsenal fixture on, you also pretty much have to have Havertz. Well, you don't have to, but I think it's just sensible. And then, yeah, I really like Dominic Calvert-Lewin for that third forward spot. Or you could go Ollie Watkins, because I like him a lot as well, and go 3 premiums up top.
Yeah. Do you like Kevin Schade for
Brentford?
Brentford, thanks.
I don't mind him. He's got a goal in him, that's for sure. So I don't mind him. I think just wait and see. Let him play Spurs, see what system Frank uses, see how they interact within that. And then from there, we'll take it from there.
Yeah. I just saw Reece James has had another setback. He's like one of the players that have the most potential that has been hindered by injuries. It's just been constant injury after injury.
Yeah, poor guy, man. I mean, it must be so difficult for him. I just hope that Chelsea take their time with him. And he's still relatively young, right? So he can have a long career still. I think just as long as he really takes the time in recovery and they build it back up slowly, there's no need to rush him back. We're so early on. And then from there, just hopefully he's all okay.
Yeah. So this is a question is more about you and your background, Jen. So let me know what you're comfortable in sharing. But you definitely have a different sort of approach, emphasis and style in terms of how you analyze both football and fantasy in particular. Can you tell us a little bit about your background in terms of, I imagine you work in like finance or something like that.
Yeah, so I'm still pretty young. I'm 22, so okay. I only finished university at the end of last year. Yeah. So thank you. So yeah, I studied economics at uni. I was definitely considering going into that route. Like I did a few internships in like private equity and stuff, but eventually I just decided it wasn't for me. So yeah, since then I've kind of just been doing my own thing. But yeah, I guess my background, sort of my very limited educational background, isn't like finance economics.
Oh yeah, and now you're doing content creation for fantasy. That's interesting though, being 22 and going that route. Just, but I think you need to have like a really original approach, because I think you have so many people saying the exact same thing, and then in some ways it seems like they're copying off each other.
Yeah, for me, I just try to whatever I can bring to the table and help my audience with the best is what I do. I don't really think too much about what other people are doing. I definitely recognize what people are doing really well and try to learn from that. But my approach to fantasy will pretty much always be predominantly eye test and then incorporating analytics. I've really changed my play style this year. Like a lot of people said to me, oh, like your contrarian style is working this year, but I've actually tweaked my style a lot over the summer. I just realized that like I wasn't getting the results that I wanted. So I went away and I thought about how I could improve my game, and I think it's worked thus far.
Yeah, I was really happy for you when Rashford scored. That was a GN goal if I've ever seen one.
Yeah, I mean, like, I obviously have just a little love affair with Rashford. I did genuinely think he was a decent option for the next 4 weeks.
Right.
So yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so lastly, what we usually do on the podcast is we have the players of the game weeks. We choose a captain, which is pretty obvious, this one. And then we have one differential, one cheap player, which is under 6 million for forwards, under 5.5 for midfielders, and under 4.5 for defenders. And then we have one donkey, which is a highly owned player we don't have any belief in. Are you down for doing that exercise with us?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, so let's start. So obviously we're going to captain Mohamed Salah, but when it's that sort of obvious, what I go to is, who would you captain if you weren't going to captain Salah?
Either Watkins or Eze.
Ooh.
Yeah, I've actually been thinking about Eze captain if I choose not to go for Salah. So yeah, that's on my mind.
Is that because of the matchup and his duo, like the next penalty is probably going to go to him, or what's the analysis behind that?
Yeah, so it's nothing to do with penalties per se. I expect Mateta to take the next one. It's more so just what I've seen from him in open play and the matchup against United, where I think he could find pockets of space, how often I think Palace could turn them over, stuff like that. So yeah, I think it could be a very open game and not a particularly impressive game from a defensive standpoint. So for me, I don't mind Eze. 5:30 at home under the lights, Hellas Park. Decent.
Oh yeah, that's beautiful. I tend to agree with that. I think if I was going to captain someone else, I would go rogue and do what is probably both our differential in Dominic Calvert-Lewin, which is really interesting turn of events, because I've made so much fun of one of my best friends because he loves Dominic Calvert-Lewin, and when he's doing poorly I always just send him pictures of Dominic Calvert-Lewin and he has an ownership of 2.8%, which is going to skyrocket as soon as he gets another hole there. So he's my differential. Do you want to mention someone else, or is that the one you're going for?
Yeah, for differentials I'd go either Eze or Watkins.
Oh, yeah. For differentials.
For like, you know how you asked me for a differential captaincy? I would go Eze or Watkins.
Oh, yeah, perfect.
Yeah.
So a cheap player. Who's your favorite there?
For the forwards, Calvert-Lewin. For the mids, Rodgers. I just think, even though he hasn't returned yet, and like he does look to be lacking that killer instinct, at 5 million, you can even have him as your eighth. And the fixtures are actually really good for Villa's attacking standpoint in the next few. And even for the next like 3, 4, 5, so I'm really happy just to have him in the side. And I think as a cheap option, he's solid. Semenya maybe from 6, but I think you'll see some spread of output at Bournemouth. So for me, it's still Rodgers.
Yeah, I think if you look at the Rodgers' underlying statistics, what they tell you is he has a expected goal involvement per 90 with 0.24, and it's like the points are gonna come. If he keeps playing 90 minutes with his output, I know it's not directly translating to points, but in terms of his underlying statistics, it's just a matter of time before the returns come. I mean, if you believe in what are you going to call it? Like the analytic aspect of the
production.
Yeah. Because 90 minutes, and the only thing I'm a little bit worried about is he going to lose some minutes at some point? But at that price, does it really matter? As long as he plays more than 60 minutes, you can just keep him, like you said, as the eighth defender.
Yeah, I mean, I actually don't think he'll lose too many minutes either because he has such an engine on him and Emery seems to love him. Plus, with Watkins' like slight fitness issues, I imagine it's him who comes off. John McGinn's obviously older than him and doesn't have the same engine. Same as Bailey. Same as pretty much everyone. So I think Rodgers is good for minutes.
Yeah. Dunkey, a highly owned player you don't have any faith in?
A highly owned player I don't have any faith in? There's not too many. I'm struggling here.
I think usually it's not allowed to go for injured players, so Isaac would not be a player you can choose. But I mean, he was.
Is it just for game week 5?
Yeah.
I think Haaland could blank in game week 5.
Oh yeah, that's interesting. That's a Jonrua donkey, as we say on this podcast. He's a previous member.
Okay, yeah. I think Haaland might blank in game week 5. I back Arsenal.
Yeah. Okay, interesting. I think it's an interesting point of the season because lots of people are going to play the wild card. Lots of people that have a lot of Arsenal and if they have Salah and Saka also, they're not going to play. So I think we're going to see a lot of different teams now. And I think that's a huge improvement on previous seasons where it feels like a lot of players had the exact same teams for 35 or 36 game weeks out of the season.
Yeah, I mean, so much better. I like this. This also suits my playing style a lot more because you're not so brutally punished for going against the template. Like, there's actually so many options now that you can genuinely find an edge over it. And I'm so happy that they've done the game in this way. They've done such a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant job.
Yeah, it's massively improved. Thanks a lot for joining us again, Gian. If for you listening, if you haven't checked him out, he's on YouTube. He's on Twitter. I'll put the links out. He makes amazing content, just even both long form video content, and also his threads are appointment reading. My favorite thing to do is open a bottle of Pinot Noir on a Friday evening, just drink, have some, like, take your time and fucking have a good time, man.
perfect. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, GM.
Pleasure.
Bulldog. Tenk deg at å spørre Geir på IT hjelper litt. If hjelper mye. Velkommen til If-forsikring.